showtime.
Welcome to the BS Show. I'm Bob Sansevier, joined, as I am most every day, by my daughter producer, Sam Sup.
Not too much. I mean, technically, you're joined by me every day because I live with you.
No, there are days where you just don't show up.
And I have
to make some phone calls and moments
left. Just not show up.
Okay.
Don't spread your propaganda.
Anyway, thank you to Tom Bernard and Tom Bernard Podcast for inviting us to be part of the network a year ago, July. Give us a call. We've got some great guests. If you'd like to call and talk to them, you can. And we'll tell you in a moment. 612-313-0289 is the number. Thank you to our sponsors. They include Bradshaw and Bryant, Seeking Justice for the Injured. It's MinnesotaPersonalInjury.com, Smart Start MN Ignition Interlock System, SmartStartMN.com, MyPillow, Minnesota Bank and Trust Mortgage Team, Thomas Brand Homes, and Frontiersman. Mentioned the BS Show, 5% off a used gun. We are joined today by, you were one of my favorite quarterbacks to cover, because not only were you a hell of a quarterback, you were fun to deal with. Tommy Kramer is with us in studio. Carol Franson is with us. Kevin Cusick from the Pioneer Press. Business and Leisure attorney Jeff O'Brien is with us. And now, psychic Ruth Lorne will be with us later. Now, last week, Tommy, you had your tournament. You had a golf tournament here. And I know Jeff and Kevin both played in it. I'm guessing it was a pretty rousing success.
Yeah, it went well for us. And, we raised money for the Leukemia and Lymphoma Society. And, we had a fairly good turnout. And, we'd always like to have more people. But, that's the way it is. We got a little rain there.
Yeah, that rain will dampen things a little bit for you.
Just a wee
bit. Yeah,
a little bit.
Now, how many years have you been doing the tournament?
Five years.
And you have a personal connection to that illness, too,
yeah,
don't you?
My oldest daughter had it when she was 18, and then she got it again when she was 31 years old.
And she's right now and doing
it's
well.
In remission, yeah.
That's great. And, well, Jeff, you've known Tommy for quite a few years, right?
4 or 5 years, yeah.
And, well, Tommy, when you joined the Vikings in 77, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then you still had Fran Tarkenton was a quarterback. And did he get hurt your rookie year or your second year?
Yeah, he got hurt my rookie year.
And then you stepped in?
Well, I got to play the rest of that game. We beat them. I think we beat Cincinnati 42-10. But then Bud didn't start me the next week.
Son of a...
So then I came in for Bob Lee against the 49ers on December 4th of 77. Then went in, threw three touchdown passes in the last 8 minutes. So we won the game 28-27 to get into the playoffs that year.
Do you remember who first came up with the two-minute Tommy nickname or what game it was that did it? Did you come up with it or was it one of the media?
No, I had that ever since
that goes back
high
to
school.
High school.
Oh, went back to high school.
Yeah, we won the state championship in... biggest division in Texas,
which is a huge deal.
Yeah,
and it just it stuck through college, and then obviously, I mean, it. See, I thought it was something maybe you got with the Vikings, because you had a number of 2 minute drives in the end of the quarter or the end of the first half and the end of the game, and it nothing ever fazed you on the field, did it?
No. Other than if somebody wasn't blocking who they're supposed to block. That's the only time I'd get mad.
And you had, going back to, I covered the year, I call it the Les Steckel error, not era, E-R-R-O-R. In 1984 was my first year. But you, over the next couple of years, you had some, you played with some great offensive linemen, but I think... After 84, you wound up at Randall McDaniel. Did you play with Randall?
Yeah.
He was with you, and Gary Zimmerman. That's two Hall of Famers. Kirk Loudermilk was, to me, a greatly underrated center. He was terrific.
Yeah.
You know, when you – who was the center most of your career?
Dennis Willie.
Willie was. That's right. He was there when I started.
Yeah.
He was a hell of a guy.
Jim Huff.
And Huff had moved over for, I think, when Swilly might have been hurt. But Swilly was – he was a guy that liked to – he made a lot of – was it chairs or benches? No, he made chairs, I think. I mean, he was a very artistic guy.
Oh, yeah. He's a great, great artist.
Yeah. And Irwin was your right tackle.
Yeah.
And your right guard, that was sort of a revolving
that was
spot.
Huff.
Huff and Wes Hamilton was on that. He might have been your left guard for a while.
Charles Goodrum.
Goodrum, yep. So you had some pretty good linemen. I know you had some great receivers. You had Ahmad when you first started. Sammy White came along. And Joe Sensor and you, I mean, some of that two-minute Tommy reputation was developed with or was continued with Joe.
Yeah, when we ran the squadron right, squadron hook and lateral.
Yeah.
And Joe doesn't even catch the ball. He just got two linebackers hanging his arm, and he bats the ball back to him. And Teddy's, you know, he's smart enough to step out of bounds on the 46-yard line because we had no timeouts left.
Do you ever watch any of the video or the old games from when you played, or is that something you just you have the memories, but not the you don't watch them?
No, I still watch them.
It's going to be a lot of fun for you.
Oh yeah, it's a lot of fun.
Do you amaze sometimes at some of the things that you were able to do?
Oh, no, I'm not really amazed because I've been doing it all my life.
Yeah.
So
it was just something that became common for you to do.
Yeah.
Now, you grew up in Minnesota,
right? Yeah, I did.
So, were you – you're a young guy.
Relatively speaking,
Were you too young to remember him playing?
No, the first Vikings game that I remember watching was that Cleveland game in 1980. And I think my dad and my uncle were at the game, and shortly after that, my brother and I had our first Vikings jerseys. I had a number 9 and my brother a number 28. So, you can tell the significance of that game in our family.
Yeah.
And that was obviously that was one of the more memorable ones.
Yeah, that was fun. That was fun. That's a fun first memory of the Vikings is to watch is that game.
You weren't born in 77 then yet?
No, I was born. I just didn't have any recollection.
I was around in 77 when you came in the first big time, the 49er game.
Yeah.
That was the one when started the whole quarterback controversy when they started to want to push Mr. Tarkenton out the door.
Was that his last year, or did he?
No, it wasn't his last year. But that's when the buzz for Tommy started was that game, because was that your rookie season?
77 was my rookie season.
So that was the first time you really got into a key part of a game,
right?
And you rallied them back, and everyone saw the future then, and Tarkenton's days, in effect, were kind of numb.
Well, yeah, because when Fran came back the next year, then anytime Fran was having a bad game, the crowd would chant for Tommy.
I thought I'd done something wrong. They said, what do you want, Kramer?
The most popular guy in town is always the backup quarterback.
You could probably attest to that, because when you had a bad game, you probably heard them calling for Wade Wilson, whoever
was
your backup at the time.
On your career.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, but those were... those were fun teams. Mm-hmm. I mean, those the most fun I had covering the Vikings were the mid-80 teams after 84. When you guys, because there are two coaches, and I want to ask you about him, that my two favorite coaches that I've ever covered are John Gilardi from St. John's and Jerry Burns. There's nothing like Burnsy.
He could be so funny without even trying to be funny, you know, because he'll be under saying something, and he'll start laughing at himself, and then you just start laughing with him.
Well, you had him in your ear a lot because you talked to him on the headsets, right? That must have been quite a conversation.
Yeah, when we were playing that 49er game, and I'd come in and I'd thrown two touchdown passes, and we got the ball back with a little over 2 minutes left, and I threw two incompletions. And so I called timeout. I had three timeouts left, and I said, let me talk to Burnsy on the headphones. And so I said, Burnsy, what do you got? He goes, I don't know. What do you got? And so that kind of went on and on for a little while. And I said, every third down I've had against them, they've given me double zone. And I said, so what I'm going to do is I'm going to put Rashad out to the right side and put Sammy on the inside. I'm going to have him run right up on the inside shoulder, but don't cross midfield. And Burnsy goes, great play, great play. And then I hit Sammy with the 69-yard touchdown.
It was a great play. Mm-hmm. It worked out pretty darn good. Now, have you done any or much coaching since you retired? Is that something you ever wanted to get into?
Not really. I guess when you play 14 years in the league, you get kind of burned out.
Yeah.
And but I did. I always had like a quarterback. I did quarterback lessons down in San Antonio.
Because, that's something you have a lot of wisdom to impart for that. And I know that when we had you on the phone a few months ago, you had mentioned that you could fix Teddy Bridgewater in a couple of days. And did you see footage of his was it 49 or 50 yard touchdown pass to Charles Johnson. I compared it to, it looked like he was a javelin thrower running up to the line to heave the javelin. So I'm wondering, I think he still may need a little work on his.
Well, I mean, you could, that can be fixed in 3 days.
It really is that it's just a matter of where his, you know, how he's throwing or his arm slot or
how he's holding the ball. You know, and if you just get that elbow up and you can come over the top of it, then when you throw the long ball, the ball will start to descend.
Yeah, because when you you had a pretty good long ball yourself. What, did you ever step on the or from the goal line or anywhere? What was your range or your distance? How far can you fling it?
I threw it about 70 yards.
That's pretty damn good.
Yeah. Well, I tell you what, that's all we were playing Tampa Bay and Doug Williams. And, I mean, that boy, he just flicked that wrist and that ball would go 65 yards. I mean, he had a big arm.
I never saw him do it, but when I covered the Giants before I came to Minnesota, they said Lawrence Taylor could stand on one end zone and reach the other one. Now, it wouldn't have been accurate if he'd been a quarterback, but he could throw it that far. Have you seen, you've probably seen some guys with some big-time arm. 70 yards is a big-time arm.
Yeah.
Did you ever do competition with other quarterbacks to see how far or ever ask them how far?
You never have to throw the ball that far usually in the game.
Yeah, the farthest last year, that one that Aaron Rodgers threw was about as far a football as you've seen thrown.
You
that
know,
one
were
like 60,
history,
65.
The longest ball I've seen thrown, and it was a pretty famous play, toward the end of Super Bowl 42 where the Patriots were trying to protect the unbeaten season. There was one ball that Brady threw to Moss that traveled 75 yards in the air and was slightly overthrown. That Moss just didn't miss it by that much. But the ball traveled 75 in the air. And you don't think of Brady
having
this like Elway-esque kind of arm. But that's the one play I remember recently of someone throwing the ball a ridiculous distance.
And that's also the thing some people – I mean, it's not – it's not about how much you can lift or how strong. I mean, it's really a matter of the technique. I mean, you obviously had technique. I'm sure there were guys that could outlift you, I'm sure. But, I mean, not many of them, or none of them could outthrow you.
Well, Steve Jordan could throw the ball 77 yards.
Is that right? So he had a bigger arm, or big arm?
Yeah.
Who else had some big arms on that team? I bet Randall McDaniel could throw the football, too, because he was just a great athlete.
Yeah,
but he never tried.
I've never seen him throw it.
Oh.
So, yeah, I couldn't say anything about that, but he was a great guard.
Yeah. Well, obviously a Hall of Famer. Him and Zimmerman, Hall of Famers. When you take a step back, Tinglehoff, Randall McDaniel, Zimmerman, Ron Yary, I mean, four offensive linemen in the Hall of Fame is pretty damn good for any franchise.
Oh, yeah.
And did you – you must have still been – Tinglehoff was still playing when you played,
right?
Yeah,
he was there when
I was there. Yary?
Yeah.
So they both were there. And I know they didn't overlap with obviously with Zimmerman or Randall McDaniel. You know, Sam, why don't we take a quick break, and when we get back, I want to talk to Tommy about this year's Vikings team. I also want to get your view. You're a Texas guy, and I know that Texans are known for having political views. So I want to get your take on who you like and what's coming up, and you know, and all, you know, just a lot. We'll have some fun when we get back with just some other things, and Kevin and I and Jeff, we sometimes slant a little politically.
Occasionally.
I want to get your thoughts, too, on...
We zig and zag.
Yeah, we zig and zag. But anyway, let's take a quick break. We'll be right back with Tommy Kramer.
Justice for the injured. It's more than just a slogan at Bradshaw and Bryant. Most of the time, you don't need a lawyer. But there may come a time when you do. For many people, it's when they're involved in an accident. If you're in an accident and you're injured, you need an attorney. You need Bradshaw and Bryant. The law firm of Bradshaw and Bryant will make sure you know your rights. Many insurance companies don't want you to get an attorney, which is the best reason to get an attorney. And if you need one, you need to talk to Bradshaw and Bryant. They deal with the insurance companies. They settle things for you. There are no out-of-pocket expenses. It won't cost you anything. They don't get paid unless you do. The attorneys representing you at Bradshaw and Bryant know what to do because they've done it before many, many times. Bradshaw and Bryant will use every legal tool at their disposal to protect your rights. Be an advocate for you and see that you're treated fairly. So if you need an attorney, give Bradshaw and Bryant a call at 800-770-7008. That's 800-770-7008. Or visit their website at MinnesotaPersonalInjury.com. That's Minnesota PersonalInjury.com. They're the attorneys to contact when you need help. They're the attorneys who will give you the help you need. Recently, you've heard me talk about the home builder, Thomas Brand Homes. But what you may not know is they do more than just build new homes. Tom Bernard partnered with his good friend and general contractor, Tom Huseman, and started Thomas Brand Homes after learning firsthand just how difficult it is to find a general contractor that you can trust and count on to do what they say. In addition to building beautiful custom homes, they are also your go-to general contractor for home projects, both large and small. From full basement, kitchen, and bathroom models to replacing inefficient windows and doors at a better price, it is higher quality than you'll find at any of the big box stores. For your home improvement projects, both large and small, give Thomas Brand Homes a chance. Call them at 612-545-5847. They'd love to meet with you and provide a free, no-pressure estimate. That's 612-545-5847, or visit their website at thomasbrandhomes.com. That's Thomas, B-R-A-N-D-T, homes.com. Are you looking to buy your first home? Or are you looking to buy your third home? The Minnesota Bank and Trust Mortgage Team, with offices in Edina and Stillwater, is able to help you no matter what your situation, whether you're a first-time home buyer or building your real estate portfolio. Their experts can help you find the best loan program for your situation. With interest rates being low, there isn't a better time to buy or refinance than now. You can visit their website, mnbankandtrust.com. That's mnbankandtrust.com. Or call 952-841-9300. That's 952-841-9300. And contact one of their mortgage specialists today to get started on financing your next home. Minnesota Bank and Trust is a member of the FDIC and an equal housing lender. NMLS number 490-951. We are back. Kevin Cusick from the Pioneer Press, TwinCities.com, at the Loop Now, business and leisure attorney Jeff O'Brien. Carl Franson is with us, and Tommy Kramer, Viking quarterback from 1977 to 88? 89. Wow, so it was 12 seasons with the 13. That's right, I always let one off. I do the actual, the 88 minus or the 89
math
minus.
Was never a Bob.
No, it was never a big Bob thing. And one of the, I was talking about my favorite teams to cover. You had some fun teams in there, and some of these, the guys on that team, Keith Millard was his first year with the team, he threatened to kill me, but then we became good friends because he was walking through the parking lot with they used to use the film projectors, as you know. And I said, hey, Keith, you got a minute? Get away from here, I'll kill you. But I still stay in touch with him. He's a great guy. I don't know how many of these guys you stay in touch with, but I remember, Chris Dolman, who's in the Hall of Fame. I asked players about, and I asked him, and he said, I have a lot of stuff in there, his things. So I asked teammates, what does he keep? He's the only guy I ever saw take a briefcase to practice. And it was might even have been Millard or Henry Thomas said he puts his lunch in there.
Oh, funny.
For folks that like that era of Vikings football, Tommy's golf tournament is a good thing to go to because over the years.
You got a lot of those guys.
See, Ted Brown, Leo Lewis, Steve Jordan's been there, Henry Thomas.
Darren Nelson
has
Jay
been
Green.
There. Yep.
Oh, so you target a lot of
several generations.
A lot of these the guys that you played with.
Oh yeah.
And Joey Browner, I always thought the world of him and Carl Lee and it was a good bunch of guys. And Irwin, I don't know if he comes up. Is he a judge now or
he's
an attorney?
Judge. Yeah,
he's a juvenile judge in Tennessee, Knoxville.
Really? Okay. And it just was a good bunch of guys. And I mean, within the last few years, Curtis Rouse passed away, and he was a great guy to deal with too. Boo Boo. I remember when he and the Fridge were the only two guys who reputedly were the only guys over 300 pounds in the mid-80s when there were a lot of them that probably
and
weren't.
And it's almost the average.
And the Fridge was probably closer to four.
Yeah.
And there's no way Boo Boo was 305.
I don't know. Yeah, you're probably kind of covering us down in Mankato.
Oh, yeah.
In that morning practice, and Millard kept messing with Boo Boo.
Oh, great story.
And so Millard started pushing Boo Boo, after the play was done. He says, you do that again, I'm going to kick your you-know-what. And so Millard did again, and Boo Boo just lines up with his left forearm, whap, hits him right alongside of the helmet, knocked him out.
Yeah, he was not a guy you want to piss off. He was a great guy and very friendly, but he not a guy you want to tangle with.
But again, I just I look fondly back on those teams because they were it was a great bunch of guys to cover and to deal with. Now, this year's team, I know you follow the Vikings from down in Texas. People are excited coming off a 10-6 season. You see good things for this team? I mean, do you like what they've done at wide receiver and the things they've done on defense?
Well, the main thing is they're getting more experience on defense now under Zim, so those guys are going to get better. And if you've got a good defense, you can play with anybody.
And he just corrected, they were 11-5 last year. They seem like a 10-6 team to me.
That's what I'm here for. I do the fact-checking live.
Well, I tell you what, I think with that schedule, 11-5 would be a pretty good record this year. Because they don't have an easy schedule.
No. That's the thing. The Vikings have a very real possibility this year of being a better team and having a worse record. Just because, you know, if you lose the close games, Packers are going to be better this year. I think Detroit will probably be about the same. Chicago will probably be a little better. The schedule's tougher. Yeah, you could have improvement and have some regression, although if they only drop a game, they probably still are a wild card.
Ten
games probably gets you in.
It certainly should, and I think that defense is just going to keep getting better under Zimmerman.
Yeah,
or Zimmer Zimmerman under Mike Zimmer. Now I wanted to tell me more about what you think of. I know we talked about Teddy. You could probably work with him, but do you like? You met him, I assume. Have you had a chance to meet him yet?
Who's that?
Teddy Bridgewater.
No, I've never.
Oh, haven't. Oh, you could probably fix him in a few minutes then. But yeah, I mean, from you watching him, do you like what you see out of him?
He does, you know, like I mentioned before, he throws the ball well from the line of scrimmage to 15 yards down the field. But for some reason, I think it's because of the, you know, the way he kind of just snaps that ball off here and doesn't come over the top of it. I mean, that's very easy to correct.
But they have quarterback coaches. Wouldn't you think they'd figure that out or just say, hey, try this?
But it's been several years where every time he tries to throw long, it's like his receivers have to call for a fair catch.
Yeah.
Almost. It's just
exactly.
A jump ball situation.
This is a good bunch of receivers he has now. Now, Charles Johnson is supposed to be healthy, and last year he was dealing with a broken rib, which supposedly is why he wasn't playing. Adam Thielen's not a bad third guy, and Jarius Wright and Laquan Treadwell could be a real good player for him, and I just don't know how they find room for Cordarrelle Patterson unless it's strictly as a returner again.
I think he's got one more year as a returner.
You do think he'll get the year?
I don't think he's going to – as a returner, and then he'll be gone. The only thing is if you have injuries and he gets a shot and actually does something with it, it doesn't drop half the balls thrown to him. But
now I'm going to switch gears away from football for a minute. Have you been following the presidential election?
A little bit. I think it's he says, she says.
Yeah.
You know, and you get tired of watching it.
Now, I'd seen something that I think there's a poll that if Hillary were elected, 3 out of 5 Texans would like to secede from the Union.
That's always the case, though, in Texas.
No surprise there.
Are you in that 60%?
You know what? It doesn't even matter who the president is anymore. You got to work through the Congress.
Yeah, and get things done that way.
Yeah.
Now, do you like some of the things you hear from Hillary or that you hear from Trump, or are you not liking any of it?
Well, I stopped watching it because it was just all the mudslinging that was going on, and, you know, that's...
It's not going to end. It's only going to get amped up even more. Now, when you moved back to Texas, did you go back to your hometown, or what part of Texas are you in now?
Well, I live in Bull Verde now. It's about 10 miles north of San Antonio.
And that's where you grew up, right? In the San Antonio area?
San Antonio, yeah.
That's a beautiful area.
Oh, it is. The Riverwalk's really nice, and good restaurants down there, good Mexican food, and a lot of good food down there.
Well, the Riverwalk is what, because I've been down there for, for Final Fours and for games, and it's one of the most, to me, one of the nicest places in the United States to visit in that whole San Antonio Riverwalk area. The one thing that was disappointing, you really could walk by the Alamo and not even know it. I thought it was just
almost do laps around it.
Yeah, it just doesn't seem like there's much, there's much to it.
It's like any city with this. It's like the Water Tower in Chicago. At some point, it was a really big deal, and then it's just dwarfed by everything around it.
Yeah.
But downtown San Antonio is so built up that the Alamo is just kind of this little...
Well, but a lot
brick
of people,
shack almost.
A lot of people come and visit it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they definitely go and you know, they're definitely going to go see it. When you going back to when you were coming out of high school, you must have been well, you were on the radar, and you probably had offers from a ton of schools. What was it about Rice that appealed to you? Was Texas also a school coming after you? Or
oh yeah, I mean I was.
You could have named your school.
Yeah, I was recruited by every school in the United States, and but you know my parents. I'm the last of 11 kids, and my parents were getting older, but I wanted to be able to let them to see me play high or college football, and so Rice is in Houston, and that's about 185, 190
so,
miles away.
Okay, so they were
Antonio.
Able to make the drive for that.
Yeah.
And that was a good program when you went to it, right, or a pretty good one?
Well, I mean, we only have 2,700 undergraduates in the whole school.
Yeah.
But, you know, I mean, they call it the Harvard of the Southwest or, you know, whatever. But it's, I mean.
It's not an easy school academically.
Yeah, it was the brain school of the Southwest Conference.
Well, that was, see, I went to Stockton State College. And we were the Harvard of Southeast Jersey Shore. The Fighting Ospreys.
Yeah, that's what my niece went to the same school that Bob did. It's now called
Stockton University.
Stockton University, yeah. But the mascot's still the Ospreys.
See, unlike when you went to Rice, my school was not accredited to my last 2 years there. Maybe it was my last year.
Yeah, my question is, that was in the golden days of the Southwest Conference, and it's all the notorious, I just saw recently the documentary about SMU getting the death penalty, whatever.
Yeah.
How was being recruited like in those days as the top quarterback in Texas? I mean, were you getting, like, offers of cars and money thrown at you by the big schools?
Yeah, my dad said, he says, if you don't look back, then you're never amounting to nothing, because you're always thinking about if somebody gives you something that you owe them something.
Mm-hmm.
And so he said, there's no way you're going to take cars or money or anything. But I mean, but that was going on.
That was going on rampantly.
Yeah.
You were pursued by Notre Dame, too, weren't you?
Yeah.
Who made the best offer? I mean, was a lot of it cars and money, or just was most of it the cars? Because cars, when you're a young kid, a car means an awful lot.
Well, I mean, you can look at A&M, you can look at Texas, you can look at University of Houston,
now, who was
Arkansas.
Was Darryl Royal the coach when then?
Yeah.
Had to be a big deal to meet some. I mean, these guys were coming to you. I mean, for a high school kid, that's a lot to handle.
Room.
Yeah, they came in. They came to you and visited you at your house.
Yeah,
it had to be it's a big deal. It had to be incredible. I know. I'm sure that who would have been? Who was in Oklahoma then? That was before Switzer.
Fairbanks.
Fairbanks. He came to you too, I'm guessing.
When a big-time coach is coming to your house, is it like a big deal where you really fancy up the house and get it all clean, or is it like, hey, they're coming, they're trying to get me, I don't have to, I don't have to impress them, they need to impress me?
Well, the thing I always ask him, I says, well, I want to play pro football, and the quickest way to play pro football is go to a school that's going to be putting the ball in the air all the time.
Which wasn't the,
it was the wishbone area. Yeah, so.
But plus, Tommy's dad had coached at Texas Lutheran, and four of your brothers also played college football.
Yeah.
Did you lead the nation your senior year passing?
Yeah.
Were all your brothers quarterbacks? What positions were they?
One of them was defensive back. One was running back. Two of them were quarterbacks.
Were they, I mean, at the high school level, were they at the level you were? I mean, were you as good as them?
Were they all district and,
And Mike has older brother played at Rice prior to him.
So was it your dad that taught all of you how to play football, or where did it come from, or did you just have good coaching where you were?
No, he just said, all right, if you want to be a professional football player, then you're going to have to work 4 days a week and throw 250 passes a day. So he built me a net in the backyard and hung a bicycle tire from it. And, I had a bag of about 10 balls.
And that's what it was. Yeah, but the one thing that you can instill is that part, that two-minute Tommy part where nothing phases you. I mean, that had it. Based on the way you played, you never were in a game where you thought you were out of it.
Well, actually, when I was a junior, and I didn't even get to start the first game, but then it rained about 4 or 5 inches, And the other quarterback fumbled four times in a quarter and a half, and then coach put me in, and I ran for 116 yards, scored a touchdown, and kicked the extra point, and we beat him 7-3.
So you were a little Cam Newton-esque back then? You did a lot of – you could run, too?
Yeah.
It was Paul Horning. He kicked the point afters.
You had a punt. Was it in the championship game that year? You had the punt. Or was it
the
playoff?
I had the extra point. Yeah.
But you punted.
28-27.
Did you fill in for the punter that year too? Didn't you?
Yeah, he got hurt when we played Brazoswood, so I had to punt.
That was the playoffs, right?
Yeah.
He had like the best punt of the year. The best play he had all year was a punt that caused the returner to flub it or something.
Yeah,
didn't you say?
Yeah, we were playing in Houston against Brazoswood that game, and I hit one end over end, and it bounced right off his chest into one of our guys' hands.
And that was the year you went on to win the state championship?
Yeah.
Junior year?
Boy, that was one hell of a career you had from high school to
college. That's not that unprecedented because there's a lot of people say the greatest punter in NFL history was Sammy Baugh.
And Randall Cunningham wasn't so bad either.
The Ray Guy was pretty good.
Ray Guy was pretty good.
That's why if you ever see video of that Cleveland game in 1980, and Rick Danmeyer misses like two extra points and like two field goals or something, and he is screaming on the sideline. Well, that's why he was doing it because he could have gone up. Tommy says it's not that hard. You just put it through the uprights.
Yeah.
And this was before. Well, Danmeyer was a straight on kicker. He was not a sideline.
Yeah, he was straight on. Yep.
Yeah, I think the Vikings were one of the last teams to get away from the straight-on
kickers. I think kickers would get really annoyed when the quarterback starts lecturing him on kicking technique.
Yeah, but a lot of his comebacks were due to the fact that he had Rick those early ones were due to that Rick Danmeyer was the kicker, and there was no guarantee that Danmeyer was going to make the field goal. So that's why he's throwing the ball 51 yards in the air against Cleveland, because a field goal would have won it, but Danmeyer had already missed two extra points and some field goals. So it's like, yeah, that's probably not the best idea.
And actually, that era, Danmeyer was one of the few NFL kickers who could really speak fluent English because there were so many. That was when you had
European,
the influx of the foreign
soccer-style
kickers.
You must have loved watching Blair Walsh against the Seahawks.
Oh, man, that hurt.
You know, I've got the voicemail after that. The fun thing about being friends with Tommy is now, I mean, he watches every game. So you'll get all of a sudden the phone will ring, like, you know, during the game or
running
afterwards.
Running commentary?
And it's, you know, it's like, huh, I remember, you know, when I was growing up as a kid, and if you made a mistake, I can remember my father sitting in his easy chair and his reaction. Now you're calling me, giving me the same reaction, whatever is going on in the film. Like, this is a little bit surreal.
Well, that one was, but I don't, you know what, I put as much blame for that on the holder as I do on Blair Walsh, because no kicker in those conditions, it would have to be a perfect strike when he puts the laces in on him in that kind of a condition. And I think he did make one earlier in the game, didn't he, with the laces in?
That's about 2% blame.
No, it's more than that. That's a terrible thing. Your job is to get the laces where they belong, particularly when it's, -7 without the wind chill involved? Walsh certainly has
accountability. And we don't know the end of this. Well, you won't know what the effect of this is other than getting knocked out of playoffs last year until the season comes along and you get the first big game where it comes down to a Walsh kick. How does he react?
Well, what about in that, was it 98 when Gary Anderson. That's only field goal he missed all year.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Correct.
See, I actually had written a column before that they will lose – on a Gary Anderson missed field goal in the Super Bowl, I was one game short. Because that would seem like the way you would wind up losing is a guy who never misses, finally missing. And that game, I don't really hate to bring it up because it's incredible. You had at that point the most prolific offense in the history of the NFL. And with more than a minute left and, two timeouts, Denny Green decided to play for overtime where it was sudden death at the time, not like it is now. It made no sense.
No.
You know, and you must have been going nuts in front of your TV for that one.
Well, no, I was at that game.
Well, you were there. You must have been going nuts.
That was the Red McCombs era, so that was... Yeah.
At that game.
And what I couldn't believe is we were on our own 10-yard line or 12-yard line, and then all they had to do was run out the clock at the half, you know, and take their lead into halftime. Well, Cunningham gets stripped, and they go in for a touchdown.
And that's, I think, why they played so cautiously later was what happened on that
play. But you're playing for – it still doesn't make sense to this day.
Yeah,
you're playing for overtime.
The whole thing of playing not to lose.
Yeah.
When you play not to lose, inevitably, that's what happens.
You lose.
But in some ways, that's 20 years ago almost, or 18 years ago, and the game has changed a lot. Just 3 years later, in almost the identical situation with a rookie quarterback, the Patriots in a tied Super Bowl, instead of sitting on the ball, Tom Brady led them down for the field goal. Yeah. Nowadays, unless there's like 30 seconds left, teams try to get a couple first downs, stop the clock, get the long field goal attempt. You wouldn't see a team with a minute and a half like the Vikings did in that game sit on the ball and play for overtime.
Not when you have Randy Moss at your disposal.
Plus, teams are so adept at clock management now and stopping the clock. When you watch some of these old games and you see the teams kind of like lollygagging to the line in the final minutes, and in those days you couldn't just down the ball. You had to like throw out of bounds or whatever. It's almost like a different game.
Well, you had mentioned about that one play when Burnsy said, I don't know, what do you got? How many plays did you call? Did you get to call many plays, or did you?
I could audible out to anything I wanted to.
So, what percentage in the game did you think were they actually? Did you audible out of a Burnsy play?
He did an entire drive in Chicago against Chicago.
The 86 Chicago story.
86, we were playing the Bears. Bob Snucker was the offensive coordinator, and so he sends in I-right 517 Z comeback, which is a kind of a comeback route by the flanker on the strong side, and then you have a dig coming in at 20 yards on the backside. So I get up line of scrimmage, and there in that Bear Eagle, I said, this ain't going to work. So I just audible out 970, and hit the flanker on the right side for 12 yards. And so the next thing, same play comes in again. I write 517Z comeback. I go up the line of scrimmage, and 970, and I hit my weak side receiver. This play comes in five times in a row.
He wasn't giving up.
You started to get the hint.
The smoke was starting to come out of his ears.
So I audible out of it every time.
Did Snucker talk to you after the game about that?
Oh, no.
I talked about for the drive.
We had a tight end drop a touchdown pass in the end zone, so we had to settle for a field goal. And so I'm jogging off the field, you know, got a nice smile on my face. Scored 3 points, and, you know, we had a good drive. And so I get over the sidelines, and Snucker's just waiting there for me. He goes, damn it, Tommy. Don't you think I wanted to run that play, only sent it in 5 times in a row? I said, Bob, I tell you what, why don't you take my helmet, take my shoulder pads, take my jersey, take my pants and my pads in them too, and my shoes and socks. I said, and you go out there and you try to drop back 10 yards deep when you're waiting on the 20-yard comeback when you have a 180-pound running back blocking on a 255-pound linebacker that you know is coming. I said, I'm not going to get myself killed back there.
And Mike Singletary was still the middle linebacker there, too, right? Yeah, that was
that,
still
that Bears team. You didn't have much time in the pocket.
No.
You always had Wilbur Marshall or Otis Wilson in your face.
Yeah,
there was that was not too shabby a defense at the time, because that was still Buddy's defense, right?
Yeah.
Well, no, that was a year after he left.
Oh, okay. But still, yeah. Those players
they
were still there.
Dan Hampton and Richard Bell. I mean, they could rush the passer.
Yeah. You know what, Sam, let's take another quick break, and we'll come back. Kevin Cusick, Jeff O'Brien, Carol Franson, and Tommy Kramer. We'll be right back. Smart Start MN Ignition Interlock System knows getting a DUI can be a difficult time in your life. Besides the stigma and embarrassment of having a DUI, you have to worry about the possibility of losing your driving privileges. If that happens, you need to have a Smart Start Ignition Interlock System installed in your vehicle. The Smart Start Ignition Interlock System prevents a vehicle from operating if you've been drinking. With a Smart Start system installed in your vehicle, the state has to restore your driving privileges. Smart Start now is offering to come to your home or business to install its ignition interlock system. Smart Start has been available for nearly a decade, and it is the only locally owned and operated ignition interlock company approved in Minnesota. Smart Start has been involved in the crafting of Minnesota's ignition interlock program, and Smart Start representatives give seminars throughout Minnesota to clients, lawyers, and legislators. The people at Smart Start know it's a difficult time when you get a DUI. You'll find them to be compassionate, knowledgeable, and caring, and they can answer all your questions. Smart Start is run by attorneys who know the law. For more information, go to smartstartmn.com. That's smartstartmn.com or call 952-224-7050. 952-224-7050.
And that's where you need to go if you get a DUI. For years, I was getting a lousy night's sleep. I have sleep apnea, and I wear a CPAP mask. I would be sleeping, and I'd keep waking up because the mask would shift. I talked to Mike Lindell, the owner of MyPillow. He told me about a pillow that MyPillow has that would help, and it has helped. I sleep through the night now. I'm getting the best sleep I've ever gotten, and it's all because of MyPillow. My wife, Mary, has neck issues. She had disc replacement surgery. She now gets uninterrupted sleep because of MyPillow. My kids that use MyPillow, they all love it. If you're looking for uninterrupted sleep, go to MyPillow. Minnesota made MyPillow, the official pillow of the National Sleep Foundation. It has one of the best warranties of any product you'll ever find, a decade's worth of warranty. I'd like to share the special offer with you. Buy a bed pillow from MyPillow and get one free. That's right, the old buy one, get one, but this is one of the best of them all. Two ways to get the special offer. Go to MyPillow.com and use the promo code THEBSSHOW. Easy to remember, THEBSSHOW, the name of this show. Or call the special 800 number, 800-320-3501, 800-320-3501. That is for the buy one, get one offer. And we have a very special offer for all of you who purchase and send us a proof of purchase. You will get a t-shirt from the BS Show, a BS Show t-shirt. All you have to do, like I said, is send us a proof of purchase. You find the information about that on the BSblog.com. I love my MyPillow, and I know you will too. Are back. Kevin Cusick, Pioneer Press, TwinCities.com, at the loop now. Business and Leisure Attorney Jeff O'Brien. Jeff, thank you for setting us up with our guest, Carol Franson and Tommy Kramer. We're just talking off the air about how I met Sam's mom. It was at 1988 game in Sweden, in Göteborg or Gothenburg. She was a Vikings cheerleader, and I was covering the team, and we wound up meeting there. And now, I actually, you know, Mike, if it wasn't for Mike Lynn's scheduling that game, I probably never would have met her mom. Even though we lived in the same apartment complex, we'd never crossed paths.
That's amazing.
How did you get along with Mike Lynn? I mean, because I know he would be
careful.
Tough on contracts. he can't sue now.
I never thought real highly of him.
Yeah.
I mean, how can you make the worst trade in the history of the National Football League? You give away three number ones, three number twos, three other picks and five players for one guy.
You know, here's what's the amazing thing about it. He so overvalued the players he traded. He never thought the Cowboys would actually invoke the picks. Mm-hmm. How he could not
and
think that would happen.
And they never intended to do anything but. All they wanted was the picks.
Yeah, when they heard that, they said, okay.
That was not only the worst trade in NFL history, that was the worst trade in global history. If you include...
you're right.
The only exception is $24 in trinkets for Manhattan Island would be the only one that would compare to the Herschel Walker trade.
No, I think this was worse.
And Manhattan, you know, $24 nowadays, that's probably...
Well, because some of the guys, these were good players. I mean, Jesse Solomon was a good player, but I think he had a first-rounder attached to him. Darren Nelson certainly did, but... There are players that are like Pro Bowlers nowadays they wouldn't attach a first round to.
No, it was
hard to believe that that trade actually happened.
Yeah. Yeah, it's staggering when you think about it.
What's amazing is the years after that the Vikings still maintained a playoff competitive team. They were not a Super Bowl contender, but they were occasionally making the playoffs when that trade single-handedly could have destroyed the franchise.
Well, it made the Cowboys into
a
three-time Super Bowl champion.
Yeah.
I think we were talking about Denny Green when he passed. That's one of Denny Green's ultimate legacies is he had him back in the playoffs 3 years after all that happened.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, he managed to cobble together a team that was competitive enough to – I mean, the Green Bay Packers made a trade like that for John Hadle in the 70s. That wiped them out for two decades.
That was a lot of bad moves after that. But yeah. I've said this about Denny, and I don't know how you got along with Denny Green. He and I had a very contentious relationship because early on, I was one of the first, if not the first, media member to be critical, and it went back to what he did to John Michaels and Tom Batta, took him down to the Senior Bowl and fired him there. Why he couldn't? He could do whatever he wants with his staff, but don't embarrass him like that. Why fly him to Mobile or Alabama to fire him and then send him back? But the one thing I've always said about Denny is he was a very good regular season coach, but he was not a very good playoff coach. You know, he never really could seem to get it together in the postseason. But in the regular season, he did do a good job.
Yeah, but how many times did he go to the playoffs with the Vikings?
Oh, he took him to the playoffs quite a few times.
8 out of 10 years, didn't he?
Mm-hmm. Something like that.
But the thing that maybe the thing that stands out skewing it is things like the 98 and the 2000. It was 2000, 2001.
41 zone.
Yeah, the 41 zip.
When you go into a game as a favorite and you lose 41-0, and they never recovered from that, and, you know. Right. Especially because after that, like 7 months later, you had Corey Stringer dying. And that pretty much ended the Denny tenure.
Yeah, and that one, though, I mean, no one, I think, looks back and says that was Denny's fault. It was a horrible set of circumstances.
Oh, no. But it just was, you know, that was the end of that team being a Super Bowl contender.
Yeah. And then Denny didn't help himself with his book when he basically laid out he was going to overthrow the ownership.
Putting a coup... writing is not necessarily a good thing. Normally you do the coup, and then you write about it afterwards.
Well, you had mentioned, how well did you know or do you know Red McCombs?
Oh, yeah.
Because you must know him very well, because being in San Antonio. And
yeah,
you know,
he flew me up here to Minnesota on his jet with him one day, you know, and once he bought the team.
Yeah. We were at the initial press conference.
Yeah. And but this whole thing goes back to where Mike Lynn wanted to lower the payroll, get rid of the higher paid players, so he and his group of nine other people could buy the team.
It would have made the team more affordable. That's why he did the Herschel Walker trade?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
I never put that together, that was his goal, to make it easier to buy the team. Yeah. He had people in that group that could have afforded it by themselves.
So they wanted a better price.
Yeah.
How utterly devious.
Yeah. Well, I mean, people were wondering that, you know, Glenn Taylor bid on the Vikings when Red McCombs got the team, but his bid was by far the lowest. It wasn't even in the ballpark. It was kind of like, well, if nobody else comes up with a lot, I'll offer more.
Well, so, Red was, he was going to pay a certain amount, all right? But so then when he came in, he put in a bid of $205 million or $205,000 back then?
No, happy in a million.
Yeah, but I mean, but he and then this other guy from Philadelphia put in a higher bid, and but then he didn't pan out with the league.
There was a guy. Red wound up with the team. There was a guy that was the.
Well, it was the Tom Clancy bid. That was the first one.
That was the first one, but then.
Was it the other guy, Reggie Fowler?
Reggie
no,
Fowler.
That was,
tie or?
No, Fowler was actually part of the bid that allowed these guys to wind up the team. The Wilfs. There was a guy, I think he was out of Philadelphia, that was the father-in-law, or would have been the father-in-law of Tom Clancy if his daughter had married. He was a big Pepsi distributor, and he actually hooked up with Mike Lynn. And the guy would have wound up with the team because he would have been the first NFL's first black owner, but he had a heart attack, and Lynn started doing things basically like he was the guy making the bid, and the guy said, while in the hospital, I can't deal with this. I'm out. So, I mean, it could have changed everything had he wound up with the team because Clancy would have wound up being involved in it too.
Yeah, I remember a story. Dave Osborne tells this story about his contract negotiations over the years. And when Jim Finks was general manager, Dave would, you know, they had the standard player contract. And, you know, Finks would have him, you know, fill it out, whatever. And Dave would sign it and hand it back into Finks, say, you put in the number, what you think I'm worth. And he said, every year I would end up getting more than I thought I was going to get. And he said, I stopped doing that when Mike Lynn took over.
Because he probably undercut it by so much. Did you have an attorney or an agent when you throughout your tenure? Did you have to get one with Lynn? And you didn't have one. You must have had one at the beginning, right?
I had an attorney out of Houston when I first, you know, signed first contract. And my signing bonus was $85,000, and my base salary was $27,500, $32,500, and $37,500 for 3 years.
You were a first-round draft pick.
Yeah.
Boy, things were rough back then. I had no idea.
Yeah.
Holy cow. And that was in line with what other NFL players were getting?
Well, nobody knew because nobody would...
Talk about it then.
They couldn't say what... They couldn't look at other people's contracts.
Oh, my God. Well, did you find out later that it was grossly under what other guys were signing for?
Oh, yeah.
How did he pull that off? Who was your agent? Well, you didn't keep him very long, I'm guessing, that agent.
No.
Oh, my. But at the time, it's, hey, over $100,000 for a kid coming out of college. That sounded pretty good.
Well, no, here's the thing. of that 85,000, I got 9,000 up front and 15 years starting. I mean, 15,000 a year starting 5 years later is my for my signing bonus.
It didn't even start when you got it?
No.
Oh, my God.
That's why those free agency decisions in the courts were so important, because they finally gave, you know, I mean, it's still a little bit, it's uneven, but it's at least it's better than what it used to be.
Yeah, at
least, a lot better than what it used to be.
At least now everybody knows what everybody else is making.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so they're slotted in.
Folks of his era went on strike twice to make possible what's happening today, the multi-millions.
Well, you must cringe and wish you were born 30 years later when you see what these guys signed for now. Oh, my gosh.
Oh, it's crazy.
I had no idea. So 1977, Chris, I was making more than that.
Well, my brother was selling big pens, and he's making more than I was.
You could almost qualify to get, like, the government cheese at that salary level.
You could have been in subsidized housing.
Well, and so many had, you know, back in the 70s, had off-season careers, too.
Yeah.
I mean, which is unheard of today.
Yeah, the NFL wasn't the $2 billion business that it is now.
Yeah, but still.
Yeah, I know.
A first-round draft pick. I just assumed it was
the percentage of the money that went to the players back in those days was nowhere near the is it 53% now or something like that? It's set. So
it's probably 5.3
every time
then.
The pie grows, their share of the pie grows. They were nowhere near that percentage, and that was one of the strikes in the 80s was to determine a set percentage for player compensation.
We struck in 82 and we struck in 87.
Mm-hmm. Well, I'll tell you what, whatever success you guys had, it might have been just unified against Lynn. Because you all had that in common. He didn't throw the money around to anybody.
No.
He wasn't the only cheapskate, though.
No, he wasn't.
They said George Halas used to throw around money like manhole covers.
Holy. I had no idea. You know what? Let's take a quick break. We'll come back. We'll talk more with Tommy Kramer, Carol Franson, Kevin Cusick, Jeff O'Brien. We'll come back with if you have anything you want to know about your future, psychic Ruth Lorden will be with us in a moment. Justice for the injured. It's more than just a slogan at Bradshaw and Bryant. Most of the time, you don't need a lawyer, but there may come a time when you do. For many people, it's when they're involved in an accident. If you're in an accident and you're injured, you need an attorney. You need Bradshaw and Bryant. The law firm of Bradshaw and Bryant will make sure you know your rights. Many insurance companies don't want you to get an attorney, which is the best reason to get an attorney. And if you need one, you need to talk to Bradshaw and Bryant. They deal with the insurance companies. They settle things for you. There are no out-of-pocket expenses. It won't cost you anything. They don't get paid unless you do. The attorneys representing you at Bradshaw and Bryant know what to do because they've done it before many, many times. Bradshaw and Bryant will use every legal tool at their disposal to protect your rights. Be an advocate for you and see that you're treated fairly. So if you need an attorney, give Bradshaw and Bryant a call at 800-770-7008. That's 800-770-7008. Or visit their website at MinnesotaPersonalInjury.com. That's MinnesotaPersonalInjury.com. They're the attorneys to contact when you need help. They're the attorneys who will give you the help you need. Smart Start MN Ignition Interlock System knows getting a DUI can be a difficult time in your life. Besides the stigma and embarrassment of having a DUI, you have to worry about the possibility of losing your driving privileges. If that happens, you need to have a Smart Start Ignition Interlock System installed in your vehicle. The Smart Start Ignition Interlock System prevents a vehicle from operating if you've been drinking. With a Smart Start system installed in your vehicle, the state has to restore your driving privileges. Smart Start now is offering to come to your home or business to install its ignition interlock system. Smart Start has been available for nearly a decade, and it is the only locally owned and operated ignition interlock company approved in Minnesota. Smart Start has been involved in the crafting of Minnesota's ignition interlock program, and Smart Start representatives give seminars throughout Minnesota to clients, lawyers, and legislators. The people at Smart Start know it's a difficult time when you get a DUI. You'll find them to be compassionate, knowledgeable, and caring, and they can answer all your questions. Smart Start is run by attorneys who know the law. For more information, go to smartstartmn.com. That's smartstartmn.com or call 952-224-7050. 952-224-7050. And that's where you need to go if you get a DUI. are back. Kevin Cusick from the Pioneer Press, TwinCities.com, at the Loop. Now, you're not working three different jobs. This is all the one thing, but these are the places to find
you. All rolled into one.
Yeah.
One duty sheet.
And Business and Leisure Attorney Jeff O'Brien, and you can find him at, is it Abdo and?
Loman.com.
Yep. Abdo. And Carol Franson and Tommy Kramer. Do you have a website, Tommy, or any place if people want to try to reach out to you?
We're working on it.
Yeah, we're going to put one up to where they can, you know, buy pictures and, you know, all those types of things.
Well, why don't you get him a quarterback camp up here?
We've done a few camps over the – we've had him guest a few. Yeah,
he can start at Winter Park.
His golf tournament.
I'll tell you what.
Oh, I was going to say, the golf tournament website in the meantime is tk9charitygolf.com.
Okay, so that's a way to get in touch. And they can get in touch with you through that site too, right?
Correct.
Now, that's actually a pretty good one. The man who fixed Teddy Bridgewater. That would be pretty good. All right, we're going to go to Ruth Lorden in a second here, but who right now is your favorite NFL quarterback, and also who do you think is the best NFL quarterback? Any of them remind you of yourself?
Well,
current and previous.
I think Brady for a while now has been the best quarterback, and Aaron Rodgers is moving up that way also.
Yep.
Ben Roethlisberger.
How about Breeze?
Yeah, Breeze is up there.
See, Roethlisberger, he's much bigger than you were, 'cause he's like 6'5", but he strikes me that there's a similarity in that both of you were fearless. I mean, nothing. Both of these guys are fearless in the pocket, but I mean, nothing phases him either.
He's a big old boy. Dante Culpepper was a big
guy. He was a big guy, too, absolutely. Yeah. We're joined now by psychic Ruth Lorden at RuthLorden.com, RuthLorden.com on the internet, and at psychic Ruth on Twitter. Ruth, how are you?
Oh, you always ask me that, and, you know, every time I feel better and better.
Well, I'm glad to hear that.
Yeah.
Now, you remember Tommy, right? Because you were in Minnesota when he was playing, I assume.
Yes, I do. Some of his teammates would contact me, and it was kind of funny. That was the wild times. And I would always know that if they were calling me late at night, go bet against them.
Because they were up late. That's funny. Mm-hmm. Now, Ruth, you will be tonight. You're going to be at the Medina at 6 o'clock.
Right? Yes.
And if people want to get in touch with you, they can go to RuthLorden.com or at Psychic Ruth and reach out to you. And now, did you – all right, let me ask you a quick question about David Clark is the sheriff of Milwaukee County. Do you see a political career for him psychically in this future? Because I think he's terrific. I may even write him in.
He's waiting for something to get blown over. He really is not interested in a big political career at this time. He's kind of a private guy. I mean, I get a funny feeling about him that he's almost like that gentleman that's sitting there with you, this Tommy Kramer, who basically, you know, if he can make a couple of $1 million, he'll go out there and get in the public eye. But he really he doesn't like the limelight shining on him. He just likes to do his job and do his thing and go home. He doesn't really want to have to get out there and promote and be shameless.
Well, you never have been a big, you know, you've never sought the limelight.
No, he doesn't. No, Tommy does not. He likes to do his job and act lazy. He's very fair. He's honest to a fault with the way today's business climate is. And he's, you know, it's kind of like a reluctant, all right, I'll get out there.
Now, Ruth, by the way, can be brutally honest, Tommy, so if she says it, you can believe it. She doesn't mince. Ruth, you're not known for mincing words.
Well, you know, I managed to reincarnate correctly. So that I had just enough of a start so that I could invest wisely. So it doesn't matter. I can be honest with people because I don't need anything from you.
Yeah.
Well,
that's a good way to do it. Now, how about your vibe of the day? I'm guessing it's a good one. I hope so.
Oh, yeah. Hold on. I got to open it back.
Yes. While you're opening it back, are we going to see you later today?
Oh, yeah, later tonight.
Okay.
The girls wanted late night. I'm going to come over I was experimenting with some lotions and potions to clean up skin, and I'm going to be doing facials at your house for fun.
Oh, good.
With my magic potions.
Looking forward to it. Now, how about that vibe of the day?
Moonlight magic, midnight shine. After a get-it-together, organize, and clean-up day, here comes the night. Are you ready?
I'm ready.
Ideas flow, creativity, a.k.a. original thinking. It rocks, and successful teamwork rules. Let's get on with it.
I like it. Ruth, thank you so much. We appreciate it. We'll see you later on today. And also, again, 6 o'clock at the Medina.
Now, why am I picking up? I know you're big, but I keep this Tommy Kramer person. What's going on with him and a watch? I keep picking up a watch.
He's got a nice watch.
Is he a famous watch or a good luck watch? Or does somebody want him to sell watch? There's this thing about houses and watches all around him.
Is there anything about houses and watches you could...
Do you live in a house?
Yeah.
No. Don't be funny.
I live out in the country.
Do you have, like, expensive watches, or do you have anything about a watch?
No. I just got a little Timex.
No, it's not about expenses. Like, he's got his, like, favorite watch, and it's time to be doing houses. It's time that he's going to have some opportunities to get involved, like maybe building some houses.
Is that something you've had interest in or that you've been talking to people about?
No.
Well, you may be.
It comes along. Yeah,
I'm waiting
for
that concussion settlement to get done.
Well, are you having any issues from that?
Well.
You have a great recollection of games.
Oh, no, I can remember all that. I mean, my mind isn't.
No, Tommy, you can't remember anything. Everything is horrible. You're fading. You're foggy. You're sick. After the settlement, you can start remembering.
It's probably good advice, Tommy.
I heard that.
Tommy, who?
Well, do you have, like, headache issues?
Well,
I am psychically picking up his headache. My head is hurting. Oh, my God.
Ruth trying to help here. He can't remember if he has headaches. You got to go that route. All right, Ruth, good advice. Thank you for that. Thank you to Kevin Cusick from the Pioneer Press, TwinCities.com, at the Loop now. She does like you because she's looking out for you. Business and Leisure attorney Jeff O'Brien, Carol Franson, and thank you so much for coming in today, Tommy. It's been a lot of fun, and I didn't even think to ask about the – let me ask now. I mean, you it sounds like you do have had some concussion issues from – how many did you have in your career?
About 14 or 15.
14 or 15?
Well, this is from high school and
yeah,
college.
Yeah, but still.
Pros.
It's still amazing. It is amazing you remember who you are with that many. Holy cow.
But, I mean, how does it manifest itself? Is it headaches? Is it trouble sleeping? How?
No. I sleep well.
But there are those bouts when you don't remember who you are, right? Nope.
No.
We're trying.
Give us something
Sam,
to work with.
Delete the last couple of minutes of this. So. Tommy, just say, I don't remember a thing.
Editing.
Yeah. I don't remember anything. I think I slept.
I forgot.
Yeah, exactly. We'll keep that in. But again, Tommy, thank you so much for making the time and joining us. It's been a lot of fun. Thank you.
My pleasure. Good seeing you again.
Yeah, we'd love to have you come on again at some point. And thank you to everyone for listening, and we'll talk to you later. I just gotta tell you.